Death is a second away. People die every 5 minutes from a fentanyl overdose in America. There's 200 a day. It's a plane crash every day that's happening, and we're not doing anything about it, right? And so that's why we're here. The old way is out. The game's changed. The drug's changed. Intervention has changed. And treatment's got to change.
This episode of Die Sober discusses sensitive topics that may be triggering to some viewers. If you are experiencing an emergency and need help, please call 911 or contact the National Suicide Hotline at 988.
For non-emergency assistance, please use us as a resource. Visit us at thefirmaddictionconsulting.com or for more information, call us 615-210-6703. Welcome to today's episode of the Die Sober podcast. Today I'm joined again by my good buddy, my fellow interventionist, and my co-conspirator in all things fighting drugs and alcohol and overdose, Mr. Zach Livingston.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Thank you for coming on.
Absolutely. Where else would I be?
I appreciate you wearing a purple shirt today. I almost wore the same shirt, so we were almost twins, but here nor there, right? Last episode, we walked everyone through what a pre-intervention and what a family day, prep day really looks like for an intervention family that has engaged us, right?
Yeah.
So imagining that we have left that the same family, we'll call them the Smith family. The Smith family is now prepared. We've gone to bed. It's now the next day.
Mm-hmm.
It's intervention day, right? We are meeting at 9 a.m. for any last second questions from the entire crew, right? We've got a family of six. So plus us, that's eight, plus the person of concern who doesn't know this conversation is coming. We're going to have nine people in a room.
Yeah.
Okay. So we already know what the room is going to look like. We've had family supply us picks, give us a layout of the house. We know exactly how we are going to seat the room, get everyone involved. And step one is we're going to enter the space, right? In my book, the best way to do it is to take the family to the person of concern.
Oh.
There's some argument out there. I'll argue this is the way to do it every time that it's possible. We take the family to the person, mm-hmm. not the opposite way around, right? Do you agree?
I absolutely agree. And there's a couple reasons why I'm in complete agreement with that. Is one, it to me, there is a display of love and concern there, right? Like, you rallied all these people and now we're all going together to an individual instead of, you know, making an individual feel like they just got duped and tricked and essentially trapped.
Right.
And, you know, maybe it's like it's probably a shitty comparison, but it's kind of like, you know, have you ever seen like a raccoon get trapped or something like that in the cage? And like, they look cute and friendly, but then you walk up to it and like they start thrashing around and like they get a little mean and violent. And people tend to react the same way when they feel like they're tricked and trapped.
Right.
And it puts them on the defensive immediately.
I would never have compared it to a raccoon.
It's a country analogy, but walk with me.
Yeah, but I got you. But I think allowing the person of concern to be in their home environment,
mm-hmm.
I think gives a little bit more safety than should they be tricked. And again, if we are luring the person of concern, if we are luring them to a location, mm-hmm. then to be surrounded, they get to legitimately say, hey, you lied to me, you lied to me, you lied to me, you lied to me.
Yeah.
This whole thing starts off.
And you can't do anything but validate that, because in that example, like, that's a truth.
Right. So walk with us, guys. We have now entered the space of the person of concern, the person with the addiction or the alcoholism. And we have nominated from the previous day, we've nominated a family spokesperson to walk either Zach or myself to the person of concern and introduce the fact of what we're doing there.
Yeah.
Right. So Cousin Sally is the person that we voted. She walks me back to person of concern. And Sally says, hey, this is Darren. We've been working with Darren for about a week. And I say, hey, my name is Darren Hobbs. I'm an interventionist. And all we want to do is have a conversation today about your drug and alcohol use. And any number of reactions is I'd say normal at that point. I can get a F you.
Yeah.
I can get a, give me 5 minutes in the bathroom. I can get, I'm not getting out of bed. You guys can come to me. Mm-hmm. And I can get anything in between. And for you guys watching at home, none of those reactions truthfully matter to me, right? Once we are involved, I am very careful, and I know you are too, about doors being shut, particularly given the rate of fentanyl and instant overdose.
Yeah.
I'm not going to allow a person who's just been made aware that their intervention is coming, I'm not going to allow them to have a door shut between us. Right. Just not going to do it.
Right.
If there's a need to use the restroom, if there's a need to take a shower, we can entertain a short hygiene break, but there is going to be a professional, either me or you, in the room, right? And should a door be shut, my clock is really quick. I say, hey, listen, man, I'm a mandatory reporter in the state of Tennessee. I'm concerned for your mental health and your well-being. I'm going to count to 10, and I by the time I get to 10, I need you to open this door and let us see that you're safe.
Yeah.
Right? And then, you know, the countdown begins. And when, once we get to zero, I say, listen, man, I really want you to rethink this. I have to call 911 right now.
Yeah.
And I don't remember the last time that door didn't get opened.
I don't either.
Right?
I don't either. And you know, at the same time too, like it's always, you always got to be mindful about the other person's position, and we've lived in their position. So right. For us, just as, you know, substance abuse professionals, that's not hard to do. But what a lot of times, like sometimes family don't realize is it, when you all of a sudden, you know, you show up in this kind of fashion and you tell the addict or the alcoholic, whatever the case is, exactly what we're doing. Me in active addiction, my first thought is, well, let me get as much as I can right now.
Exactly.
Because my world's about to change.
If I've got any remaining product, I'm taking that right now.
And right now, everything's, it's just too dangerous. You know, it's just too dangerous to allow.
And I think part of what we'll highlight in further episodes of the show is the urgency around acting now, as opposed to being able to slow play intervention in years past. I think slow playing stopped 2016, 2017, when fentanyl really started making its way through almost every drug, right?
Literally every drug.
But let's catch this up. So we've made entry. We have introduced ourselves to the person of concern. Person of concern has had any number of reaction. Screw you. I need to use the restroom. Or you guys can come do this in my bedroom. Or he's actually agreed to join us in the living room or the dining room, wherever we've chosen. And 9 out of 10, we get to that living room pretty quick.
Yeah.
Right? So seating arrangements. You know, my perfect team, I've got 4 to 6 family members plus me or you, sometimes me and you.
This is a topic I put a lot of emphasis on.
Right. I don't want the biggest team. I want the most precise team. And the way we suss out who's in the room is who is important to our person of concern, not the other way around. Aunt Edna, as much as she prays the rosary for the person of concern, if he doesn't believe in the value of their relationship, Aunt Edna can stay home, right? I want the relationships that matter most to our guy, right? So in getting seated, a lot of times I like to game the person of concern's chair and his chief enabler. I want to be faced dead away from him. I want eye contact, because that chief enabler on intervention day has going to been coached to be their toughest.
Yep.
They're still kind and loving.
Right.
But today is the day that the conversation changes, right? And to hear it from my chief enabler, if I'm the addict, now I know the script is flipped.
Yeah.
Right?
There's some doors that are closing.
Doors are closing, right?
Big time.
And then around that chief enabler, I want at least one, possibly two people that make him or her strong.
Yeah.
Right? So person of concern is looking dead at enabler. Mm-hmm. Enabler is surrounded by strength.
Yep.
Right? A lot of times that can be siblings or a significant other.
Yeah.
Right? Significant other for the person of concern or significant other for the enabler. But what we want to have happen immediately is for once we get seated, person of concern now knows the conversation around my drug use or my alcoholism, the conversation that I've had a ton of time to prepare for,
yeah,
and that these people don't, none of these people know the whole story.
Mm-hmm.
I think that they know the whole story.
And there's a couple other pieces too that I like to do too, because this is one of those topics that I feel like some interventionists or some family members would see as like, you know, getting lost in minutia. And I argue the exact opposite, very similar to you.
Yeah, details make the deal.
Dude, just like you have, you know, the person direct line of sight with the chief enabler, if possible, I really like to have somebody who's like a strong presence to the person being intervened on, mm-hmm. kind of right next to it.
Absolutely.
And us as an interventionist, more at like the, you know, the person's like 3 o'clock or 9 o'clock, kind of, you know, off to the side. They could see us, but we're not like their main focal point.
Yeah, I like to be able to float.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I don't want to be a fixture at the table
mm-hmm.
unless it's absolutely necessary to keep peace.
Correct.
Right? I want to be a floating MC. In the best case interventions, mm-hmm. we say very little.
Now, oh, yeah.
Now, best case.
Like a maestro, you know, just orchestrating.
Right. Now, best case happens very little,
fact.
Right? Because families don't know how to have these conversations. Mm-hmm. But in a best case scenario, we get seated, right, mm-hmm. relatively quickly. Family's been informed, hey, we don't need bio breaks. We're not good enough to get a banana. We're not going out to smoke. We're gonna have our phones on silent. We're not dialing out. Mm-hmm. We are going to be solely focused, unified front. Our words are gonna be chosen with love and kindness, and yet they are going to be unyielding. Today is the day that your mental health, your substance abuse is no longer your fault. Let's remove fault, but today it becomes your responsibility, right?
Correct.
And so that's when we typically would say, dear person of concern, hey, your family's written you some letters, and all I'd ask is that you hear each of them out, and at the end of the letters, you're going to have a chance to respond, right?
Right, because us as interventionists, I mean, there's no need for us to come in, you know, just guns blazing this and that. Like, we'll be as cool as humanly possible, and at least I will, until that right gets completely removed. Like, if they get real erratic or something like that. But even
right.
then, like, you coach with kindness.
And I think neither one of us really look like, you look like a criminal. I look like a cop. Right. So
one of the important reasons of introducing yourself, first question, who's the guy with face tattoos in my living room right now?
Are these guys vice? Am I in trouble? What's going on? Right. And I've had to leave that way. Hey, mm-hmm. Hey man, my name's Darren. I'm an interventionist. I'm not the police.
You're not a cop.
I'm not a cop. You're not under surveillance. You're not under arrest. Okay. But we are going to have a conversation about, you know, your cocaine use. But being able to just be kind and hey man, I'm not above going in bearing gifts when I make that introduction.
Right.
Cold Gatorade, his favorite Mountain Dew, whatever mm-hmm. his favorite thing is, something from Starbucks. Hey man, I'm not here to ruin your day, but your family's going to have a real serious conversation with you.
Yeah.
Starting in about 10 minutes. So if you'd like to get dressed and join us, now's the time. Right. So resetting the deck. We've got family seated, right? We've got person. We've got chief enabler, hopefully in direct line of sight with our person of concern. We've got likely the family spokesperson who introduced us seated closely to the person of concern. Mm-hmm. We've filled in the gaps with the others. We've got letters written and prepared, right? We've probably reminded the family at this point, make sure your letters are in your pocket or on your phone and ready to roll.
Yeah.
At least 10 times.
At least.
And at least one person in every intervention can't find it or had their wife or husband hold it, and there's a little bit of a hold up. We aim for ideal. We navigate around the misses, mm-hmm. right? There's never going to be a perfect intervention, right? In my mind.
No, it's because, you know, it can be super intimidating for family members. That's why they haven't had these conversations yet.
Because they don't know
why we're there.
Right.
It's intimidating. It's emotional. It's depending on who the person is, like, it might be a little unpredictable. Mm-hmm. And of course, somebody's going to misplace something. Of course, somebody's going to forget a minor instruction and a pre-intervention or something like that. It's our job is to be just increase the efficiency and like the smoothness and just coach
and fill in the gaps.
Exactly.
Right.
You know,
fill in the gaps.
So, just like a football coach, you know, he's maybe the defense is doing something that they didn't expect, but they can call an audible, you know, and we'd essentially do the same thing.
And that's where we come in is we call the audibles mm-hmm. and make them as seamless as possible. Right. And so person of concern now has agreed to hear the letters, but he'll say, I'll hear your letters, but I'm not going anywhere.
Yeah.
All right.
Hey.
I know that guy. We see him.
I love
that. We see him and her a lot.
I am that guy, you know?
Yeah, well, I'll hear what you got to say, but I ain't going anywhere.
Yeah.
All right? Forget the fact that I'm not going anywhere, mm-hmm. but I live on your couch. I use your credit cards. I drive your car. And, mm-hmm. you know, I spend all your money and eat all your food. But right. I'm not going anywhere. I'm making the rules here.
Yeah.
Right? If you guys at home didn't know, alcoholics and drug addicts can be quite delusional about their place in the pecking order of importance in a family system, right?
Yeah.
If you think about it, delusion really isn't it, because most of the family has catered, in a lot of senses, has catered to just placating this person.
It's learned behaviors.
It's learned helplessness, right? Mm-hmm. So we go around the horn. I like to select the order of my letter readers by how warmly they were welcomed by the person of concern, mm-hmm. right?
Which is a pro move. I mean, I do the same thing, and I learned it from you.
Right. But you always, like, that first person can also be, if there's a little bit of humor that can break the ice,
yep.
a little bit. Like, we don't need Saturday Night Live.
Yeah.
But if there's a little humor, if there's a warm nickname that takes him back to a place of being vulnerable, right? When things were good, I want that guy or that girl speaking first. I want to pull emotion out first before we get to the heavier stuff, right? And so you sequentially build, mm-hmm. right? So, you know, we've got our team. I'm having the warmest person read first. And again, these letters are 45 seconds to a minute and a half tops. They start with a warm introduction. They come with concrete facts about what we've been seeing around using, drinking, consequences. And then we make a warm invitation. Will you get help with us today? These letters are almost postcards in my mind, done mm-hmm. correctly, right?
Yep.
And so we're making our way around the room. Person of concern has so far accepted what he's been hearing, mm-hmm. right? And
I'm watching them.
I'm watching reaction.
While they're getting, bro, they're having the letters read to them. Mm-hmm. I'm watching them the whole time. Right? I'm trying to read their body language. I'm trying to read how they react to certain mm-hmm. statements.
Am I this?
Yeah.
Do I have a pillow in front of me?
Right.
Am I guarding myself?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Am I
terrified to look at one of my parents or my significant other?
Yeah.
Or one of my adult children?
Mm-hmm. If I am making eye contact, all of
those variables can change our recipe on a dime, yes. right? If or when we get to a letter where we see a crack, mm-hmm. we see a crack in the facade, I might say, let's say Eric for today. Eric, what about your sister's letter when she told you about your nephew asking where you were? What about that started to make you cry, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we're not going off script. We're just seeing a crack where we might be able to get some emotion.
Yeah.
Right? Because if logic and reason worked on drug addicts, there would be no drug addicts.
Exactly. Right?
If logic and reason worked, people would stop doing harmful things to themselves for the sole purpose to continue to do harmful things to themselves,
yeah.
right? To blot out their feelings. So
addicts are slaves to feelings. Most humans are, but addicts and alcoholics like 10x that.
Right.
Slave to feel. Everything's based on how I feel, how I feel, how I feel. Logic and reason, you know, you might as well be, you know, talking about quantum physics or something like that.
Yeah.
But we can leverage that in our favor if we understand what we're looking for and if we understand what it's like to be in that person's position.
Right. So you've got a tier. Follow up a question. And let's say I get nowhere. Okay, cool. I tried.
Yeah.
I let it go. Next speaker.
Even if they don't answer, the question's still on their head. They hear
right.
it.
And if I ask that question and I get no response, our families have been coached to sit there and let that heavy silence sit there.
Yeah.
And that we are going to break that response.
Mm-hmm.
Right? We are going to break that silence.
Yeah. We don't need the codependent in the room to rescue them.
Right. No jokes. We're not coming in with humor. We're not coming in with the banana peel to save anybody.
Yeah.
We're going to let that thing sit. And a minute of clock time to me or you is 30 to the person sitting in that chair.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That attention span that was ADD squirrel is now centered.
Yeah.
And that attention span's now going, man, I've got a decision to make.
Mm-hmm.
Man, my family is for real right now.
And you can usually see their posture change, their face change, the look in their eyes a little bit more. It's more instead of like, you know, this defensive or I'm just angrily staring at the ground.
Yeah.
It's more like you can see where it hits them.
He breaks the silence. In this case, our POs, our person of concern, Eric breaks.
Old Eric.
Eric breaks the silence. And the question was, you know, what upset you when your sister mentioned that your nephew was wondering where you were. And Eric comes with something like, he's always been my baby brother.
Mm-hmm.
Now you go in.
Yeah.
Now you go in and you say, I think I would go in and say something like, tell me about your baby brother. Right? Like connect him to his feelings.
Yeah.
Right? Tell me more about him. Why do you love him? Why does he love you?
Mm-hmm.
What are some things you've done together? And again, we've got readers on pause, but we know where we're going.
Yeah.
Right?
We know
me
the way.
And you and I can do this silently.
Mm-hmm.
Like you can jump in and take the mic. I know you've seen something or vice versa,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. We know where each other, I know where you're going to be
right.
in your line of thought, and you know where I'm going to be in mine.
As we're getting to some vulnerability in our person of concern, Eric, that may make me rethink the order of the readers, right?
Mm-hmm.
I might know... Big brother's got a smoke show of a letter.
Yeah.
Right? That's really going to hit him in the heart. Mm-hmm. Where I was going to leave him for second to last, we might take that and go build some more momentum right now. Yeah. Right? I typically leave the chief enabler's letter, who we've coached to be a little bit tougher than the rest. I like to leave that chief enabler's letter for cleanup. For home, like it's it.
Yeah.
Right.
I like to leave that as the hammer. Because
exactly.
And the other side too, one, it's because the enabler's taking an opposite stance that they have historically speaking. That speaks volumes in itself. But also, the way I think about it too is the chief enabler and the family dynamic, they've already seen everyone else go. And all of a sudden, like, they'll pick up on their momentum. To me, it's safer to place the enabler last instead of, you know, second.
Yeah. I also think where you put the, in any family where you've got good cop, bad cop, right?
Yeah.
So imagining this is a younger men's intervention. Mom has been the enabler. Dad's been the sheriff.
Mm-hmm.
So mom, in this case, she's been chief enabler all of this young man's life.
Yeah.
Dad's been the sheriff. Dad's been the no guy.
Yeah.
Right? So what we've coached dad to do is be his sweetest. I was so proud of you when you did this. My heart burst with joy knowing that I got to be your dad every day.
Yeah.
I didn't tell you enough. I didn't show you enough. But man, that's what I felt.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And if dad starts showing tears, I always coach him, let him fly.
Hey,
let him go.
In a young men's specific intervention, in many interventions, tears from fathers, particularly of the generation just above ours from, you know, 50 couple to 70s,
mm-hmm.
tears from those fathers are like diamonds, right? Because their children have rarely seen them.
Yeah.
Just a generational deal, right? Mm-hmm. So you got good cop. I'm ending the show with good cop, bad, or bad cop, good cop in reverse roles, mm-hmm. right? And Chief Enabler is going to ask the question, similar to what everyone else has asked, will you get help with us today, right? Floors now back to Eric, our person of concern. Mm-hmm. And that's, I'm looking at his reaction and I'm looking around the room. Any good alcoholic or drug addict is going to have to tell us no once. Yeah, at least once.
You got to toss up at least one rebuttal.
You got to tell me why you can't go at least once, mm-hmm. right? So in this guy's case, we know he's got a job interview.
Yeah, there's always a job interview.
There's a job, yeah, there's always a theoretical job interview.
There's always one.
Or there is a real job that he's barely hanging on to. Mm-hmm. He might have a significant other, right? Or former significant other. Mm-hmm. That's still really important. We might have a pet.
Who's probably there anyways, if she or he's healthy enough.
Right. There may be a pet. There may be a legal obligation, a medical obligation. But again, as we covered in mm-hmm. Family Prep Day, each one of those obligations that we've flushed out has been assigned yeah. to a character. So when I say, Eric, will you let your family help you today? And he's going to say, well, what does that look like? If he says, what does that look like? That means he pretty much knows
yeah.
that today is ending and going in treatment, mm-hmm. right?
If my heels are dug in, I'm absolutely not going. I got the resources to not go. I'm not going to ask right. what that looks like. I'm just going to not go.
Right.
That's the question where it's like, oh, you're so close. You're right there.
You're right there. If he asks a specific question about which facility has been chosen, mm-hmm. he may as well pack his bag right now.
Yep.
That is tried and true. That's math that I've done over my 12 years experience. Once a client asks about the facility, the next thing they're going to fight about is typically phone use, but we can get over that. But that's field research. Mm-hmm. That's not documented. But so Eric said he's come with his objections about, well, I've got to pay my bills. Dad stepped up and said, hey man, I'm going to take care of your bills. Yep. He's asked about his pet, Charlie, the dog. We've got big brother's going to take Charlie, the dog. Mm-hmm. He's asked about, I've got to go to court. Cool, man. That's where me or you would explain how a letter from the treatment center would actually be able to push that back. Any court's going to be happy that their client would be proactively taking care of an issue. So it comes down to he's got no objections left. And so the question comes again. Eric, will you let your family help you today? And a lot of times I get, and I know you do too, well, I'll go, but not today, right? And so tell me some of the questions. I've got my way about it. You got your way about it. I'll go, but I'm just not going today. You guys shouldn't have surprised me like this, right? Because that's how it works. That's real life.
It is. The only reason I'm laughing about it is because you. I mean, we know. They know. It's like, what the hell you got to do today? You know, like, yeah. What you got going on? You know, Monday Night Football, a case of Coors Light and some blow. Like,
right.
You ain't got shit going on.
Right.
There's, you know, once again, on one of those, usually what I'll do is I'll take it and just play round robin with it a little bit. Mm-hmm. And just dig deeper. You know, once again, ask questions. Well, yeah, I mean, talk to me. Let me know how I can help you. Like, what's your hurdle to going today?
Yeah.
Like, let's just iron it out. Like, just for sake of continuity and communication, like, what the hell's holding you back, man? You got
starting in the basement of suite like that?
Yeah.
There's a whole lot of room before we got to go to power move.
Exactly.
Right? So we're still, as far as he knows, we're still having a conversation.
Right.
He has no idea that there is a second round of communication from mm-hmm. the family that would dictate consequences to him absolutely saying no.
Exactly.
Right?
So if you come straight out of the gates on that, you know, full sprint and just going to the absolute extreme, just, you know, on our end,
right,
you got nowhere else to go from there.
Right.
Like you've spun your tires and you've dug yourself into the mud. Now there's no other play.
Okay. So Eric's got, in this case, Eric, our person of concern, he's got mm-hmm. several concerns that he believes are going to keep him from going today.
Yeah.
Okay. Whether we think they're real or not, he's convinced mm-hmm. that they're real. Okay. In his mind, he needs to get, he's got to get a letter out to his attorney. He's got to pay some bills. He's told a friend he's going to hang out. He's got to see his girlfriend one more time, mm-hmm. whatever the deal. But I'll go in a couple days. Okay.
Yeah.
That's when I'll go back in one more time and say, listen, man, today's offer is really from your family's heart. Mm-hmm. None of these guys in this room would lie to you. Like, you've already accepted, like, you've heard them all present their case that they're worried for your life, judging by your overdoses, your car crashes, your financial issues, everything that we've thrown out, right? And I ask him, do you think these people would alter their schedules, come together today to mm-hmm. tell you a lie?
You know,
do you think they really win anything other than knowing you're safe by securing your agreement today, mm-hmm. right? And he's going to say, yes, no, or yeah, but they just don't understand. I've got to see my girlfriend.
See, and on right there, that's, you know, a lot of the times, because at this point, they're telling me or you that.
Right.
Right. They're not looking around at their family saying, hey, you got, they're looking at us having that conversation, telling us about it. They're trying to convince us because we're the pros in the room.
Right.
One thing I've done a lot that's had a lot of good success, at least for like just cracking the door to them just a little bit more, is when they do that to actually, because they're always looking at me or looking at the floor, right? Mm-hmm. It's to actually invite them to like look up, like look around, like make eye contact with everyone, like look around the room, like look at everyone's eyes, man. Yeah. Like, can't you see how glazed over they are? Like they're all here on love, but they're terrified, man.
Right.
And I'll invite them to like really like look, they're
terrified they're going to lose you today.
Mm-hmm. They're terrified there won't be a tomorrow,
right,
if we don't go today.
Right.
Look around, man. And so, it usually nine times out of 10, it cracks the door a little bit more, because once again, the only reason that they're looking at me or you or the floor is because they're afraid themselves to look at what some of their own actions and behaviors has caused within this family dynamic.
Right.
But at the same time, like where there's delusion, we also want truth, right? Mm-hmm. And when it's a direct view of truth about the way their behaviors have impacted the love, the concern, the fear, right, on all, you can't avoid it when you're literally staring it in the face.
And the question, if it gets down to it, I'll ask Eric, mm-hmm. and say, hey man, what would you do to the person who has neglected their son the way your addiction has? What would you do to the person who's lied to your mother the way that you have?
Mm-hmm.
What would you do to the person who's taken your father's money and crashed his cars? What would you do to the person who's ruined your credit, wrecked your every college attempt? What would you do to that person?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, would you want to be associated with that person for any more time? Right? And the only answer they can give you is no.
Hell no.
Right? Like, hell no, man.
That guy
no.
Like he sucks, man. I don't know.
No, and it's a way of like dissecting the addiction from the person where they can actually like look at it,
mm-hmm.
instead of going, oh, I'm just a heap of shit and I deserve to die.
Yeah.
Right? Because in my mind, we're not battling a person. We are trying to get the person to start battling his or her disease.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? And the disease is what's causing the dysfunction in the family.
Nailed it.
Right? So when you separate, you know, an accrued volume of hits, right, of what the disease has caused for this person, you really get to invite them to look and go, oh, yeah. Man, there's really nothing going right in my life.
Right.
Like I, this does need to change,
mm-hmm.
you know? And that's really where I get to where if we're still going, yeah, man, I hear you,
mm-hmm.
but I'm not willing to go today. And I'll say, okay, man, I totally get it. If that's where you're at. And this is, if I think I'm close and it's just ego that's keeping Eric in this case from being able to agree, a lot of times I'll invite him to go get private with me.
Yeah.
Maybe walk on the deck. If he, you know, if he vapes, he smokes, he dips, whatever. Well,
dude,
walk on the deck, step into a separate room, and possibly take the one of those warm relationships mm-hmm. with me, and just talk turkey.
There's been several interventions that I've done at this point where, you know, we're at this exact point that you're talking about, and they go, oh, I just need a minute, just give me a minute, and they get up and they storm out and go on yeah. the back deck. And the family, their auto response is, it blew up, it failed, it didn't work. And they're kind of in panic mode. And I always tell them the same thing, like, guys, just shelter in place. I'm going to go talk to them. And 99% of the time, we come back in and he says, I'm going to go today.
Right. But it's, and it's because we've given them the private mm-hmm. forum to make their mind up without feeling like you guys are making me do this.
Exactly.
You've got a chance to make it an autonomous decision, right? And I get to go there and say, look, man, I don't get any more points in heaven. I don't get to kick over a treasure chest if you go today or not. I'm just here speaking for your family's concern,
mm-hmm.
right? Happened in Hartford.
Yeah, it did.
That big bear of a man stormed out.
It did.
You know, and 30 seconds later, hand me a softball of crack.
Yeah,
he had to make it his idea. Anyway, in this instance, what we had was a young man storm out of his intervention, and I gave him some lead time. Mm-hmm. I gave him some time to breathe. He got to gather himself, and then I got to just ask him questions about where he wanted to go with his life. And within 30 seconds, he knew the move.
Yeah.
He knew he would much rather go get medically detoxed and go to treatment than continue trying to kill himself $2 at a time with fentanyl bags.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And once he made the decision, it was a far different thing. He entered back into the intervention room to yeah. hug his family and love on him and thank him for the opportunity
mm-hmm.
when he had left, saying, F you and F this. Right? And so I really think, you know, when we get to that point where we invite the person of concern to go have a private conversation, that's where I'm going, okay, either we come out positive on this conversation and we continue.
Yep.
Or I take his word for it that he's a no, right? And we do this. We do this very similar way.
We do.
So if we come back from, you know, this private conversation where it's just me or you and like a tight family member.
And if it's a no, coming back from that, I always tell them like, all right, like at least have the dignity to go in and tell them that. That way we can for right. sure get them back in. And at the same time, like they always say yes, because if the ego is winning at that point, so is their desire to, you know, make their display of power. As right. well, they're always going back in.
Right, and I think you actually taught me that. I always spoke for them,
mm-hmm.
just out of expediency to get to what I know is next,
yeah.
right? Which is consequences. But
yeah,
I like your way of doing that a lot better.
Well,
so you come in. Eric says, "Hey guys, I appreciate the letters. I really appreciate you guys coming today, but I can't accept your offer of help today."
Mm-hmm.
And that's when we introduce consequences.
Yeah. And right? I'll always have them take a seat prior to announcing that as well.
Right.
Always.
I want everybody seated.
Because once again, we've set up the seating to our advantage.
Right.
You know, and typically the person being intervened on is the furthest one from any kind of door or exit. Because
in a perfect world.
In a perfect world.
Yeah.
But,
Sometimes we get set up in rooms with four sliding glass doors and
yeah.
and a kitchen door that can easily be run out of.
Hell, some guys, if you had a small dog door, they're going to find a way through if they want to.
Right.
But once we get them seated, like that's to me when it's go time. We're pressing play on boundaries, and for me, like what that really just looks like is like, hey man, like that's fine. You're a grown man. Like you can make those decisions, but it would be really irresponsible if I didn't let you know. Like there's some things that are going to be changing in this family as a result of that. Like immediately. Like and you need to understand what they are.
Immediately today.
Immediately as in like, as soon as this is done.
Totally respect the fact that mm-hmm. you don't want to go to treatment today.
Yeah.
I've asked your mom to read a set of family boundaries that will be put in place today as soon as she reads them because you've declined treatment.
Yeah.
And mom goes into, I'll no longer pay your phone bill. I'll no longer allow you into our home. I'll no longer support you financially.
Meanwhile, that's a big, you know, to somebody like me or you present day, that would be a non-issue. We'd be like, we have our own. But you got to remember too, Eric's sleeping on the couch.
Right. This is a young man entirely dependent mm-hmm. on mom and dad's kindness.
Yeah. Eric's got nowhere to go right now.
Right. You'll no longer be able to use family cars. You won't have access to any other family properties or work in our businesses.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then we go, and I have mom go around the room to speak for everyone. Yeah. Right. So,
and it usually starts with, you know, least severe to at the very end, the most severe of those consequences and boundaries.
Severe. And so at the end of this consequence list, you know, and it's not all about like, there's some people like, if you were to intervene on me today, mm-hmm. like you couldn't take my toys.
No.
Right. Mm-hmm. But you know what you could do to somebody like me? You could say, hey man, I'm not going to protect your secrets anymore.
Yep.
And I'm going to make sure that everyone you know knows that you're in fact using and you're sick on drugs again.
And
now you got my attention.
Yeah.
Right.
Cause there's all, you gotta, you know, part of the, to me, boundaries and consequences, like to some people listening, like that might sound like it's like this punitive thing. Like we're trying to punish the person.
No.
For me, it's the polar opposite. It really is. Like to me, that is the ultimate display of love. Like if I was intervening on you for me to say, you know what? Because I love you so much, I don't really give a shit if I piss you off. Like I'm willing to put myself in front of that based on how much I actually love you.
Right.
And there's
in a family dynamic, it gets real. It can be real twisted up because moms and dads will go, well, I can't make him homeless.
Mm-hmm.
I can't take his car. What if something bad happens to him?
Yeah.
And I go, well, mom, what about the time he overdosed in your bathroom 2 days ago?
Right.
Something bad's going to happen.
Yeah.
You just get to decide if you want to be complicit.
Yeah. What about the $300 you stole out of your purse? What if something bad happens to you?
Right. And just for our families at home, boundaries and consequences are on a spectrum.
Yes.
On a grand spectrum. So I don't want to scare anybody or freak anybody out of potentially participating in an intervention mm-hmm. with someone you're concerned about because you know you can't make them homeless. There's a lot of steps between boundaries and having to pull the ultimate card to a mom or a dad or a significant other.
And we would never put anything on there that was a bluff. Like if there's something that right. gets offered up that the entire family isn't willing to do,
right?
Then it can't be on there.
Right. You can't bark bigger than you're willing to actually chomp off and bite.
Exactly.
And the families that we've seen have success, mm-hmm. By and large, most of the families that we do work with, we agree on boundaries. At some point, there is hedging in the family. Someone hedges mm-hmm. on a boundary.
Yeah.
And what we do in that case is we get other family members to bolster them. To bring them back to yeah. their seat, right? To bring them back to the fact that, hey, we've made a series of agreements that we are all going to act in unison as a team to push Eric into the right place, right?
Yeah.
And the ask for Eric, now Eric's already reconsidering. No, wait, because you mean I don't have a car?
Yeah, hold on. But I thought I could just sleep here tonight. And
you mean like I don't get access to the Oreos and the money? And you mean I got to give you my credit card with your name on it? I mean, like so. Things are really changing.
Yeah, man.
And you know, in this case, mom and dad really mean it about sleeping in the house. Hey. So they've said, you know, you've got 10 minutes to pack a bag to either go to treatment or with Darren or Zach.
Yeah.
Or you've got 10 minutes to walk to the end of the driveway. Right. And Darren or Zach give you a ride to wherever you want to go.
Yeah.
Now he's now reconsidered.
And typically I like to tailor them to what's important to the individual. Mm-hmm. I mean, sometimes it's like social stuff is, you know, how he's perceived amongst his friends is important. Sometimes it could be professional. It could be legal. It could be spiritual. It could be financial. Like, what is it that has the most or her personally?
Right.
Right. Because I've seen some people, they want to do all social stuff, but, you know, the person is... He's been isolated and pushed everyone away for so long, he just doesn't give a shit.
Right.
But if you mention, like, you know, the fact that he's on probation and, like, the PO officer and, like, some financial woes, all of a sudden his ears perk up.
Right.
You know, it's always pretty much tailored to what is it about this man or this woman that holds the most weight? And if it's the Pop-Tarts, we'll pull the Pop-Tart card, man.
Right. But for the most part, and I get no joy, honestly, and I know you don't either.
No, I don't get wish any, we never needed them.
I don't get any joy in helping families bring really tough consequences to life. Mm-hmm. But I do know that bringing those consequences to life often is the difference in a lost life and a new life.
Yeah.
You know,
it's accurate.
Particularly in today's drug market where fentanyl can kill you today.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Hard boundaries work. And, you know, not all interventions are the same. Not every intervention that we will run you guys through will look exactly like this. We're going to do several mock-ups of different types of intervention in the episodes to come. But this would be a typical young men's, you know, early adulthood to cap age, however long mom and dad have been kind and generous enough to supply resources, or significant other has been kind enough to supply resources. And this is a snapshot. These snapshots that we'll be presenting to you guys will all hit the same pillars. They're all going to go by the same mile markers. We want to be truthful. We want to prepare the family to be hopeful, number one, but to be prepared to fight long-term, number two. Yep. We want great treatment lined up with precision directed directly towards the person of concern, right? We want to make sure that we're telling the families exactly where to go for treatment and exactly why, so then they can make an informed and comfortable financial decision. And then we talk aftercare. Aftercare to me starts on day one. I think the great John Southworth, like one of the dons of the whole thing.
OG.
Let's be clear. It's a year, right? Like we, in an ideal situation, we are engaged with a family from day one to day 365.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, not everybody stays engaged that long. Not everybody can swing it financially. But one of the things that we're going to do on the Die Sober podcast is show you guys how to do this at home. So on our very next episode, what we're going to bring to you guys is a live intervention. We're going to have real players, real intervention, real drama. And Zach and I will show you exactly how we handle that. So for today, I think we've got to a stopping point. Thank you, Zach.
Yeah, hey, it's my pleasure to be here.
Don't wear purple tomorrow. I'm going to wear purple tomorrow. But thank you guys for checking us out today on the Die Sober podcast. And we'll see you again real soon.
I'm wearing purple.
Fuck you in purple.